As you know, we've partnered with Bitbox, makers of the Bitbox O2 hardware wallet. It's a secure, open source, Bitcoin-only hardware wallet with the best user experience in the industry. I personally use it to guarantee that I'll always have access to some of my Bitcoin in cold storage whenever I travel. If you want to check out a Bitbox O2, you can use the promo code HIGHHASHRATE to get 5% off your purchase or go to bitbox.swiss/HIGHHASHRATE. All one word, no spaces. Check them out.
Ah, screw it. Here we go.
And here with integrity in Bitcoin, I think that provides us with the sort of regularities on top of which, and the ethos to look at, here we are decentralizing. We've successfully, money was invented in 2009. And how do we decentralize language in such a way that we get a similar payoff from having a space that no one can dominate?
Hey, everybody. This is the High Hash Rate Podcast. I'm Mike.
And I'm Dan.
And this podcast is just two plebs getting high and talking about Bitcoin, life, and the absurdity of the fiat world. Our guests don't necessarily get high with us, and you don't have to either.
But it helps.
Yeah, welcome back to High Hash Rate. So tonight's guest, this is sort of a strange... I just have to tell the story. So, you know, we have this YouTube account that's like super popular, and we get so many freaking views. It's amazing, but no one comments on our YouTube channel, except this
first post.
This that's true. This comment. This guy's kept on coming on, and he started timestamping all of our, like, basically, I can't even count how many videos you've timestamped on all of our videos. And I was like, who is this guy? And so I reached out, and man, you got this, like, so we're talking to Jeremy tonight. I should just say we're talking to Jeremy tonight.
Eating, yeah.
And you
and
have
he's the
this,
one,
like,
he's the one that was been commenting, to be clear.
That's right.
There's a connection.
Yeah,
for sure.
Oh good. So no, we've got Jeremy on tonight, and he's got this crazy bio that we, you know, in your Twitter bio that you don't have to read out, but I kind of wanted you to, like, unpack a little bit about that. But Jeremy, how are you doing tonight?
It's great to be here. I love being invited. Thank you. This is a perfect fit with where I'm at. So thanks for looking at my stuff. I'll start just springing the memes at you. You know, for me, the future is a function of the conversation we're having now. So, you know, I'm glad to be having a space here with you to see what the future holds.
What do you mean by that? What do you, when you say that the future is a function of the conversation we're having right now, are you saying?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, that's for me, that's, so if free will exists anywhere, it's in the world, words that come out of our mouths. And, you know, and so here we are in a space that has this potential, like, we're living into the conversation. And, you know, I couldn't be saying this except through this invitation you gave me, where you're like listening these words into existence. So that wasn't going to happen without this.
Okay, that's a good, we'll get into this stuff.
I just thought of Westworld, you know, for some reason.
At a deeper level, but it's like, when you speak things into reality.
But oh, yes,
that, while that's a somewhat common phrase, like, more mostly you hear around, yeah, like, you, almost everything that we created in this on the planet as human civilization started as an idea. So, like, what do you think is more important, the idea phase or the, like, encoding it into physical reality phase where you speak it?
It's a great question. What I like about that question is that it has me look at the process I'm engaging in. And, you know, there was once, so I kind of have two things. I said I had slides, but there's sort of this observation about...
Came with slides, amazing. Okay.
Well, yeah, I
can't wait for this, yes.
You know, actually, the thing is, I'm grateful that the YouTube, you know, being able to put these timestamps into a video, it's given me a place to reflect on what I'm, you know, taking in. Mm-hmm. And because that's a public facing, you know, like notepad, you know, because in some ways that's mostly for me. Although I just muted myself.
Wow,
for you,
that's
way.
Interesting.
Yeah. So you just happen
that's
to see inside of this window that's, you know, it's just kind of involuntarily there by way of my, you know, ingesting your content. So, let me see. There's one thought. I'm gonna play with this speaker share screen, and I will do my best to describe what I'm looking at because a lot of our listeners are.
I see. So actually, yeah.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Well, hey, if you're listening, you gotta go to the YouTube.
Cause there you go. You're gonna
just
drum
gotta
up
be
those...
one of the many, many followers going to YouTube.
Yeah, it's actual. Okay, so my file name is in here. So anyway, this is just one dude, and so I can't find this quote. His name is Gregory Bateson, died in 1980. He's known for cybernetics, being involved with the Macy conferences. Anyway, I'll set all that aside. That's all just background, actually. And so what he's remarking on here, and this is the quote, I don't actually have the quote, but I'm recreating it here for you. So he says, essentially, to understand something, you've already got to have like 9/10 of that already in the background of like your experience, right? And so I'm going to stop this share. There we go. What I mean by that is that, and I just expected this is going to be like a metaphor that keeps coming up,
okay,
in all this. So, I think he was calling it sort of like the pre-encoded nature of communication. So we have a common basis of, you know, here at English. On top of that, the Bitcoin. There's a lot there actually for us to have in common actually. So that just makes, because there's more in the background, more can show up in the foreground. So
okay,
that's
yeah,
the first
yeah.
thing I wanted to lay down. Yeah. What are you getting from that, Dan? What are you hearing?
I have a lot to get to that, but I wanted, before we get too far into this, I do want to cover and just to get some context about like who you are and like what your background is and why
you're
so interested in what you're interested in.
That I think is the next best thing to look at because... So I could go way back, but for me, it's a topic nowadays of exponential technology. I was reading about this stuff around the turn of the century, and at the time, what was there was not necessarily the AI stuff, but the molecular nanotechnology.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, we had just like, you know, figured out DNA like in the past decade, right? Like things were starting to happen, information age was kicking
off. Oh, I
see.
Yeah. Yeah. At the time. Well, I remember initially before the other shoe dropped, looking forward to, you know, the post-scarcity future. I just was leaving my first job and my boss said, like, what are you looking forward to? What are you doing next? And I was like, yeah, I think radical abundance is just on its way. Hey. And not too much more than a year after that, I sort of learned what I didn't learn before I dropped out of high school around, you know, just the United States and Latin America, the way the media appears to work. And
are you talking about like manufactured consent by Noam Chomsky?
There you go.
Okay.
There you go. His my first broadband internet, and I was downloading MP3s off of an anarchist radio site that, you know, so you could play something on air where mm-hmm. broadcasting was the idea, but I was just listening to these. And I thought, uh-oh, you know, this world, like, this it blew, it, I'm recovered from this sense, but
yeah.
Like, this world is not going to work out. Here's the way power has existed. Here's the value of human life that's, you know, unless it's like, you know, a sob story or something, you know, there, and then here comes exponential technology. And the phrase that occurred to me looking back was that the interdependence that we have was going to be antiquated. And so that had me looking for like you know, how do I get myself out of this existential trap that I've been in? And so really, I'm an information consumer by personality trait. And I was on the hunt for that. And today, I actually am very happy to be share. Like my paranoia is now pro-noia.
Okay. So to try to summarize, you went, what was, when you say your job, like what was it? Was it like a specific type of, is it part of your career or was it just like a job? Like when you tell somebody,
no,
like, I'm quitting my job.
What's the industry?
I'm quitting my job to partake in radical abundance.
I was moving on to other things. No, okay. No, I was working at before there were Mac stores or Apple
okay,
stores.
Gotcha.
I was working,
okay,
doing computer repair. And so I, actually my favorite part about that job was just talking to people.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, no, it had nothing to do with like, I'm
okay.
I'm
just curious. I just wanted to
send sail to Valinor now. And
yeah. Yeah. No. So you went from this very optimistic outlook for the future. And then through, you know, some things you read and some things you learned about the world, you kind of became maybe nihilistic or just like
disenchanted.
The dystopia is quickly approaching.
You know, I call it the hero's journey of just now there's like, oh, there's something to deal with. There's some action. There's an ego at play and he needs to survive. So, you know, and so slowly crawling back to, it's another 2 decades till I get to Bitcoin at this point.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I'll just try to cut it short. Right now, what I see Mike smiling. So what got me out of that place was seeing that, and actually just hearing someone tell me, and this was one of those MP3s, that human beings only experience conflict at the level of strategy. And meanwhile, at the level of our human needs or values, we all have this common origin. We all have the same human needs. We know, we relate to those needs through the strategies that we use to meet them, and generally don't make this distinction between how we're meeting our needs as the strategy and what that is. It's two separate things, because everything we see is a strategy. All the actions or the approaches to doing these things. And the thing that hit me here was when this guy said that when, you know, failing to make this distinction, when I then run into someone who does not like my strategy, has a different strategy, they're against my strategy, I actually experience it as they're against my needs. And so I experience them as an enemy. Because after all, I'm alive by virtue of having my needs met, you know, physiologically, socially. And so this notion that we only have enemy images of each other, and actually the easiest thing to do to solve conflicts is actually just put the needs on the table. It's just that with the thinking that we have, we're in chronic confusion about this, and we know how these other people are, and there's a whole historical record of all this stuff.
Yeah.
And so to me, that solved politics. That solved the original and abiding human alignment problem.
So you're not on Twitter that much anymore, but what you said struck me, because if you had been, or if you were on there, you would know how very plainly obvious what you just said and how true it is. Because everybody who is on, well, you know, at least the Bitcoin part of Twitter, talking about Bitcoin, every single one of those people has a different, whether they know this or not, you know, consciously, it's like a strategy for how we're going to orange pill the world, how we're going to get a hyper Bitcoinization, how we're going to make it the world reserve currency, whatever you want. But everybody's got their own strategy. Some people are like trying to get the government to approve everything. Some people are trying to say, fuck the government, we're going to use this to upend them. It's going to be a revolution. Some people are like, we're going to go through the financial system. We're going to eat it a lot, but everybody's approaching it from a different strategy, right? And then the people who, when those strategies aren't aligned, that's all they do is fight and bicker with each other. And they basically get to the point where it's like, you are the enemy. You're trying to kill me because you bought Bitcoin from a different company on a different app than I do. You fucking traitor. You know what I mean? Like it kind of boils down to that.
I think that's called the no true Scotsman fallacy.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. The petty tyranny of tiny differences or, yeah. I mean, so obviously, yeah. So but
do you want to go in? Do you want to go into the rest of that presentation, or
yeah?
I have an alternative question,
Michael. Wait, what's on your mind?
Well, I kind of want to know about this whole, this notepad taking of comments. Like, how often are you watching YouTube videos constantly and being like, okay, I have take a note here, take a note here, take a note here. This is such an interesting, practice.
Well, that's what people who take notes when they study do, Mike.
But to do it,
no, just kidding.
To do it, fuck you. To do it publicly is what's interesting for me. Because you're gonna go back to that if you ever.
Well, they have. I mean, they have websites where you can literally just like annotate the news, right? Like you go through and you can annotate the news, or you can annotate lyrics, or you can go through and like people do it on YouTube, right? Like they at this specific point in the content. This was my thought. This is my interpretation. And then people interact with that, right? And they debate back and forth. Like, what is the meaning of, this thing that they encountered?
Yes. And there's... Shit, man. Okay, so... Am I going to bring up my other slides here? I mean, what I was laying down for Michael around what we could talk about is what I call the minimum viable conversation for eucatastrophe. And what I mean by that is what Tolkien meant by that, which is it's the good catastrophe. And in terms of like fleshing that out, I'm going to go on a long discursive mind rant here.
Enjoy.
So... I was reflecting on people are familiar with this. Information wants to be free, right?
Yes.
So that was I think it might have been Steve Wozniak on a panel with Stuart Brand, and this is the Long Now Foundation fella in Whole Earth Catalog. Anyway, he ended up saying. In this conversation, because they're looking at, they're talking to abstract principles, and the converse statement there in a dialectic is also information wants to be expensive, so information be expensive because it's the thing that can make all the difference, and it wants to be free because the cost of the marginal production of transmitting yet another bit is it's near zero, so. Between those two, I ask myself, what's actually going on there? And so for the informing value of information, wanting it to be expensive, that's like, hey, if right now, if I had what the best practices for public speaking were, I could use those things. And, in terms of what the potential of our communication networks are, is passing around those best practices to where they want to be. And so I ended up saying that, yes, information, sorry, rather, best practices want to be practiced. And so what I mean by eucatastrophe is just the sort of snowballing of these things. And the core thing that I have to say is around what is, like, what's actually missing for us to have this hyper-Bitcoinization? Because everyone's gone down their rabbit holes. They have their thing that they think is going to make the difference. And they're all, they're competing. Cramming to get they're wedged all in the door. They're trying to get through and express themselves.
Is maybe there's already a thought process around this? Maybe not, but like maybe you'll know. Is there like a Darwinism to information where like the most valuable information or the most whatever you would call signal outcompetes or survives the noise or the the totally. What's the?
I would say, for sure.
I mean, right. You know, just
the entropy, like the signal somehow outsurvives the entropy.
Okay, that's what a meme is, doesn't it?
Yeah, right? And yeah, I just want to take note that you're building the background. You can all Dan can already sense it. What I'm going to say here. So that one little tenth of the thing I want to say, he's assembling this thing. Okay, so so where is this locus of Darwinian competition for human attention and sense making and telling one idea as better from another? Like what's the best strategy? So. Okay, actually, this
dopamine, getting people's dopamine receptors to react.
Yeah, well, that's the best strategy for for what to eat.
Oh, obviously. I think I've got it. I think I've answered your question. The best
way
to do that is to just have a podcast. The more podcasts the proliferation of podcasts is the competition of ideas now. Syndicating on RSS feeds to be publicly, freely, and available.
This is what I've come to believe, and it weighs on my mind. I'm glad you asked me about it because I need this meme. It needs to reproduce, right? It's looking for some virgin cranial space.
That's funny that you put it that way, because that is what the original concept of a meme was. Like, it's this gene or this thing that this idea, this concept that just keeps surviving through time and evolving.
Because here it's offering us some fittedness on how I have you listening to me because of the memes running through my veins. Because it, like I said, it preys on my mind. I woke up one day reflecting, like, this is it, guys. This is like, what's actually going on historically here? Being way too fucking dramatic for.
No, it's fine. It's good stuff.
Oh, God! I wish I could just let you in. That was the whole idea of the slides, basically. But I'm glad we have an air gap. I'm glad to be verbally challenged, and thank you once again for listening. So I woke up with sort of the context of opening the space for it. So here's the background. Here's the 9/10 to see what I want to point to, which is that so the Reformation. So after the printing press, now then everyone had their own Bibles, and then the printing press, movable type. Lowering those costs. Here I've got the word. I'm going to challenge the church. Reformation. It accelerated the Renaissance also. And then we had the Enlightenment. So coming back up to our lifetimes, we've got the World Wide Web in the 90s.
Uh-huh.
And where are it, which is so much more powerful in terms of movable type. This is movable type on a global, instantaneous scale, more or less. And where are the concomitant benefits? We've had maybe there was the Arab Spring. This was, because of Twitter. And we've got surveillance capitalism. And then now the superpower, AGI, this AI superpower wars race coming down on our heads right now. And so there was a disconnect there. And this is where I want to point to the thing that I have not ever heard anyone say. And I'm going to share my screen again. This is, okay, just going to jump in on this. I spent more time trying to figure out how, I can see this in my head. So here you are you're looking at a book. And the way that if you were in a library that say had all the titles, I'm just going to scroll through here and just ad lib this. You're going to be able to go get that book from that library and look it up and then start reading you know, you can find the quote that, you know, and look at it in its original context. But what actually goes on, the thing to notice is that this is exactly, you know, so here you're at a web page, and then now the web page, you know, you've got a hyperlink, and it's going to save you the time of, you know, finding, like, standing up and actually finding the title. It's just there instantaneously. What you don't get in this, if you're in this library, is that if you show up to, you show up to, and you have Bob's, book, and then you would never know that actually out there in the rest of the stacks, Alice wrote a book quoting Bob, replying to what Bob is saying. And coming back to you guys. So that's the same exact thing on the World Wide Web. So in some the World Wide Web never was hypertext. There, in this sense that it was just sped up, a sped up digital page. The original vision for hypertext actually exploited the degrees of freedom brought about by the virtual space of, you know, on a screen, what's going on, what you could never reduce to paper. And so when it comes to creating this environment for competition, memetically, if whatever I published, there was no way to avoid the feedback that was native to the sort of laws of motion of that medium, then that changes radically what the incentives are for communicating.
Okay.
Yo, there's a lot to unpack there.
I feel that you touch on that in the article or the, you know, writing that you said. You said you talked about speeding up. What was the term, right? It was...
Can I just say you painted this picture for me of like these books are like locking information away, you know, in these like tombstones of books, like these libraries of, but because they can't connect to each other. It's like the place where the text would go to die, but then when the internet emerged.
No, that's a good point. So if Alice references Bob in another book.
That's amazing. Uh-huh. What an interesting concept. I didn't even think about
before it. Before the internet, well, what do you mean? It's citations. This is a pretty common
so,
right,
so that's for the outbound links. That's the outbound links. But what if, you know, what if you're reading the book that this new book is referring to?
Right, right. So when you talk about these links, I mean, the entire industry of internet and digital marketing is kind of built on the links on websites, like the SEO, search engine optimization. And the algorithm that Google uses to rank all this stuff that they show up in search results, I don't know if it still does, but at some point you've got higher authority based on how many links your specific URL had outside. So like in the higher the authority of the page that linked to you, the more of a higher of a grade you got. So if like, you know, a .gov, like something from the White House linked to your URL that had a way higher authority and a way higher ranking in the algorithm than, you know, than if some WordPress blog did. And it's, but anyways, like I just thought that was an interesting thing to note. But to get back to what you're talking about, how the internet changes and speeds up the behavior, I guess I'll let you explain it.
Yeah, well, I mean, so the PageRank thing is, it's very much in the air. it's, you know, if you look at how, I mean, in some sense, it's sort of a wisdom of crowds.
Well, when you go to a library, you don't have to know which book you're looking for. I mean, maybe you do, but you go to a library, there's a bunch of books. But when you go to Google... Opposite of what I'm saying, but anyway.
I'm just like sitting with this might be something we edit out, but in terms of my own.
Never, never.
Like, okay, well, good. Yeah, I'm happy to go with my process here, but like I have a facial spasm that's like signifies tension in all this stuff, and so like you know here, you know I so yes, Dan, the way that that's compensated for that we can't see who is linking to the most authoritative page. They crawl the whole, you know, they grab onto one right. page and it's all, you know, then the crawl from all the links that they discover and so forth. And yeah, that was the original, that was the third time that thought was actually had by somebody, was Larry Page. And
his name is Page. That's funny. Ironic.
Yes.
Determinative normatism. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that?
Yeah, like if some the
simulation winking at us.
Yeah. Yeah, it's when somebody like my last name is Webb and I'm a web developer. Larry Page created a way to rank all the results on the internet and put them on pages.
The two other people were not named Page before him.
Right.
This is covered in the book called Plex. So I mean, we could move off in a holographic direction from there. The point being that that allows for this sort of what I think of as a naive, you know, this is who has authority by all the social signals. But then going back to the 9/10, you know, that's given this like the prevailing way of viewing things, this is the best answer. And so that in and of itself isn't really adversarial. It's sort of, there's a quote, I think it's foundational here in terms of the question is not what is the answer. The question is, what is the question? And so this is, you know, what are you trying to do? What need are you trying to meet? So it's not what's the best strategy. Tell me, doctor, or self-help, whatever. But it's actually, no, like, what are you dealing with? Like, what is the background that you're coming from that you're looking for? So in terms of that pointing of authority, as soon as, you know, if in fact that was pointing in both directions, then this, it sets up a whole different, I'm going to share this again. And this is what was coming to my mind today. Where, so suppose this little guy right here, is actually asking a different question, and if so, the question for me, the question is how do we get the, you know, the butterfly effect here of changing the whole paradigm by way of, the person who's not asking the question that this person is blindly assuming. I don't know if, so the big yellow right here, I'm waving my cursor around and I'm not even clear if that's going to show.
At a giant smiling face, right?
Yes. The big yellow giant.
All right. There's a giant yellow smiling face next to two red smiling faces and a blue smiling face and a green, and surrounded by some green smiling faces, and they're all pointing at each other. Okay. That's what I want.
Yes. Well, I mean, what it's showing is sort of, this is the naive, you know, this is the answer. And right now, to me, this, what I see here is like, oh, the answer is artificial intelligence. We need to, you know, Putin said it himself best, and he's a great person to be saying this, where it's like, you know, whoever has this will rule the world. And to me, that's, yeah, you know, what one of the things I like about the Bitcoin community is that they're looking at ways of addressing incentives and politics. And
I'm thinking about, so you kind of said something and then kind of moved on to another topic, but something about going to two people trying to communicate and one person kind of assuming what's going to be asked.
Yeah.
How does that affect like this breakdown in communication?
Well, actually right now I shouldn't make this too self-referential, but I'm getting, my flow is getting abrupted by my chin here. So Fuck, man.
You know what? I feel like I'm a dumber version of you.
That's, I was thinking the same thing, Mike.
You guys are so sweet. You are so sweet. I mean, you know, I tell you, on my own, like if I'm taking a shower and I'm just peering through the multiverse in my head.
Oh, it's always
I'm
how it works.
Soaring. Oh my God. Oh, it's great.
But yeah, while we're getting back on track here, like what I'm thinking about is.
Yes. Because I still owe you an explanation.
Yeah. Is it in the How of Hyperbitcoinization, the essay?
Yeah.
Talk about like humanity hasn't dealt with the unworkability of its communication. I've been thinking about that basic concept a lot lately. I mean, there's just constant arguments that I'm seeing in public discourse, whether it's, you know, online or wherever, where the message that somebody is conveying can be the exact same words and the exact same tone and the exact same context can be heard by different people, and they are all interpreting it completely differently. And it makes me think of like the psychoanalyst Lacan, and one of his famous remarks was that all language is meant to be misunderstood, that the fundamental aspect of interhuman discourse is misunderstanding. And that's all we're doing is we're literally, the best technology that we've got, at least available to pretty much everybody, is language, whether it's written or verbal. And it's not that good. It's very unreliable. It's extremely unreliable. It's the best we've got. It's extremely unreliable.
That and if not for that, we couldn't pun.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, and you know, there's
an AI couldn't be funny without that.
It couldn't get hung up, and yeah, see the way that it defeats itself. What was I reading today? It was explaining to a person how it is that there's only two R's in strawberry.
Yeah.
Something about how it splices its tokens. It couldn't actually really. It's got the straw and the berry, and they're in, just seeing that there was a double there. Anyway, so.
So, Jerry, what?
What do you want to know, man?
I want to know what the hell your bio means, bro.
We live. Yeah.
Well, read
Practical,
it. Read, it to
you
me.
Read this
Practical,
bio.
Yeah, practical, you catastrophe or nothing. Mm-hmm. Future retro hypertext towards the preservation of social inhabitation of literary memory as planetary body.
Did we just unpack all that and I just missed it all?
You know, so okay, you know what? Okay, so there's the thing is 30 years ago what got set in place was this surveillance capitalism model of advertising, and that it being like a partial subsidy to.
Have you read Jared Lanier, Who Owns the Future? Okay, yeah, that's
his, okay. Okay. So yeah, okay. And have you?
Yes, I have.
Yeah. So exactly. I'm not saying anything new to you there. He says that, you know, going to the humors, that chapter where like there's only a few different ways like technology, politics, money, and all this can come together, and you know. And once we figure out what went wrong with the web, it's going to look a lot more like what Ted Nelson saw at the beginning of all this. You know, first saw text on a screen, and you know, months ago, when I decided, okay, like who invented the term, not hypertext, because that was him, but then micropayment. It was also fucking Ted Nelson. I mean, he makes these neologisms, the mashup of the portmanteaus of, you know, he's trying to describe something. You know, unfortunately, he names his project after the poem that was never finished because it was forgotten, because it was interrupted. And to get a bit more esoteric, I think in the human design system that I'm more of a fan of. It's not the astrology. It's the same birth time information, but a different interpretive template. His sort of sun sign is the voice in the wilderness. That was most of the day of his birthday. I don't know that for sure, but I'm speculating that if he's, you know, if reality looks like it is and he's the voice in the wilderness, you know, by God, here we are. We need to get back to that parallel reality where reclaim it, actually. So we naively went into the 12th hypertext project. It was simple enough. It lacked everything that made it anything hyper, the World Wide Web. That was the easiest thing, spread like a weed. And to build on top of that, it's a shitcoin. The web is a shitcoin. I say that in that essay. There's no hope for it. And here with integrity in Bitcoin, I think that provides us with the sort of regularities on top of which, and the ethos to look at, here we are decentralizing. We've successfully, money was invented in 2009, my favorite way of characterizing this. Money was invented in 2009, and how do we decentralize language in such a way that we get a similar payoff from having a space that no one can dominate? And this, you know, it's in the same way money becomes one. If you want to say something of consequence, you're going to say it into this environment where you are most vulnerable to being attacked, to being critiqued, to receiving this feedback about what, how. So, and there's no way to determine whether, like, are we being in advance to determine, are you misunderstanding me or am I not explaining myself well enough? But through this back and forth, this
right
hermeneutic process, we're going to clarify something. And the structure of hypertext is the kind of multidimensional thing you could never reduce to paper, to actually follow and sort this out. So
okay,
inside of confronting the unworkability of our communication, all these edge cases of these best practices are going to be discovered. You know, that little green guy I was trying to point to is, you know, he's going to ask a question that undermines the basis of the authority of this fiat power structure, you know, habit that's going on, and slowly migrate into something fun.
I'm trying to find a way to, like, put it simply. So maybe help me out here. Like, what is it about, like, this hypertext, this, you know, the World Wide Web, why it is a shit coin compared to Bitcoin? And you started to talk about this. You're getting into this where you're getting the critical feedback. You're in a vulnerable position.
Yeah.
And then contrast that with hypertext. Like, what, if you had to summarize or synthesize, like, the very basic problem of why is the World Wide Web a shit coin, how would you describe that?
Well, so that's what I was getting into with the looking at what is available to me inside the library. I can only look for what I already know.
Yes.
So the thing is, if there was the two-way linking, then what that would allow for is that everyone who interacts with an idea can leave their own input onto it. And so suddenly it's orchestrating the movement of sort of curated collective intelligence into wherever you happen to show up on the network. And so in terms of the sort of the evolution of social reality, people haven't had, you know, you have to seek to destroy your own confirmation bias and put yourself in uncomfortable situations. And, you know, if you're Descartes, you know, doubt that you even notice the external world.
Right.
That kind of skepticism. So, you know, the incentives, you know, compared to nowadays, so the incentives are upside down because, you know, you can't get ahead by making others wrong here, because all of a sudden they're going to tell, they have feedback on top of what you're saying, where they're saying, like, no, you didn't get this right about what I said. You know, you're not quoting me here. And just even at the basic transclusion level of, you know, if this is some more detail about the kind of fundamental differences and how this is actually paradigm showing up in well documented in Jaron's book, Who Owns the Future, where you can't take someone out of context. I could maybe quote something and then put my own context around it. But that inalienable, like, I'm pointing to where this came from. It's been assembled on the fly. And so the context is always juxtaposed there, one motion away. So if I'm going to take you out of context, I'm going to make myself look bad for doing that. So this raises the common bar of the kind of discourse that our system, fosters.
And how do you envision how this is going to start playing out in the future with, at least until recently, when you're interacting with, you could more or less tell when you were interacting with another sentient person on the other end. People could fool you. It could be a bot. It could be whatever.
Yeah, I'm not too concerned about that.
Okay.
I mean, so in terms of the,
it's so easy to do a Sybil attack where you think that you're surrounded by people with these opinions that are giving you a specific type of feedback, and
totally
people outside this conversation, but like the average person, they are not equipped to think adversarially about, like, are these people real? Is this all an illusion? That are all these accounts that are...
Yes, it is.
Yeah, exactly, right? Yeah. And even if they are real, they are real people, are they just regurgitating what the algorithm has fed them? So they are a real person typing, but they're saying the same thing.
Totally.
Like dead internet theory, right? Like it's they're saying the same thing that AI would say. It's like it's just...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that is the backbone of pointing to, authority, like who's the alpha sigma or whatever, that kind of regurgitation. And so so that everyone's piling into NVIDIA, right? So that's
right.
That's the herd mentality there. So in terms of dealing with redundancy, so this is where if I'm visualizing the slides I did not succeed in making. If here's what I wrote, and then on the sides are the incoming, so these incoming signals need to fight amongst themselves in order to be the one that is featured as the best counterpoint to what I'm saying. So, and there's a basic, I just saw another branching path I could run down from there. But
you pick.
Yeah, well, actually, so I mean, there's a way in which, seeing how this plays out, where this side-by-side thing, so Ted Nelson says the this new form of literature that he saw back in the 60s and is coming to a screen near you, it allows for it's perfect for either adversarial or collaborative conversations. And right now, there's a way in which to even get it articulated, you're evoking, like, well, what's missing? Like, why don't I already agree with you? Why don't I already know what you're thinking? Or like, why am I thinking you're wrong? And we're going through this adversarial thing, but because it's inside of this documented history, and we're not doing it on the battlefield, we're doing it, sentiently, we're actually building that bridge to do the phase shift from an adversarial thing into a cooperative thing.
And that's the eucatastrophe, where we stop.
That's one of the signs and wonders of.
Yes.
And so when we talk about on this episode a lot, like, or it's not just us, everybody talks about this in the community, Bitcoin community, is Bitcoin's aligning incentives. So this is a technology that is creating an incentive structure and a feedback system that is naturally aligning people to be more likely to cooperate in an uncertain situation.
Yeah. Well,
if they have that basis of, like, this is how we're going to communicate, this is how we're going to exchange value, information, whatever, we're going to use this protocol. And if we use this protocol, maybe we'll get some sort of, like, alignment and a cooperative outcome, game theory, right? That's what we always talk about in Great Breaking Game Theory.
So, so the So the I should have said it at the time, but in terms of the whole solving politics conflict exists only at the level of strategy. It's called nonviolent communication after Martin Luther King or Gandhi. And it's sort of Tolstoy also wrote wonderfully about this, where he's saying you can't drive out evil with hate. You can only do that with love. He's got this. I would check out his three parables. Is that what it was? Anyway, it's perfect for this sort of getting through the adversarial point. And this was people who I'm going to take your inhumanity expressed because I'm here reclaiming you. It's fucking Jean Valjean being bought by this priest, saying like, this is a gift. Actually, life is a gift. And, life is a miracle. Speak yet again. There's this opportunity here to make a break with the past. This is what I was saying at the outset. And so aligning incentives, what I see with, I plan to get on here and pick a fight with all sorts of other podcasts. Top on my list was, the person who just drives me crazy listening to him talk about talking without even realizing the value of speech, just reducing it all down to fungible, Satoshis. I'm trying to bring in, let's actually apply this to language, without a token. And, so that money can be money, communication can be communication, and that the market can be the market. That's another slide that maybe we can get to, where, for deflation, we need to have a market where there's this shared reality of like, this is money, this is the thing that's risk-free.
Right, so and that's a good point. Like on the stock market or whatever bond market every day, it seems kind of like taken for granted that the money is, if you're on the New York Stock Exchange, the dollar. But that's not necessarily true, right? Because when you got people trading derivatives, you got options, equity, debt, and you're looking at a stock and you're looking, should I buy this stock? Well, if it's a distressed asset, then it's like this equity is all a speculation, because really the only thing that's going to end up resulting in the liquidation value is for the debt holders. So the debt holders, and they're not even going to get 100% of the debt.
Debt holders.
Exactly. And then, so when people are trading an asset or a derivative of an asset or a synthetic on the stock market, the what everybody in that transaction or in that market pool considers like, this is the money or this is the collateral or this is that, everybody's looking at that from a different perspective, and you're assuming what this other person's valuing, but they're not looking that value the same way.
I start out my essay by saying I just know no interest in money, because it's all this information asymmetry game. And it was only seeing how, it's a longer story, but that information, if we had shared reality around what's so, then we wouldn't, there's a way in which, the Cantillon effect is closely mirrored by the, the high frequency trading bots. And I just had this, this game where, this is your hand, this is mine, and I go like that, and if I miss you, then we switch. It's just this little like flinch mechanisms of trying to navigate a boundary that is this financial thing, as everything's become financialized. And I just want to say I'm saying novel things. Looking down at that, it's just there's no communication in it. I want to go back to the there's some sort of boundary negotiation thing going on. But going back to people, Bitcoiners talking, but without Bitcoiners creating a space in which the rabbit, like where they invert the filter bubble, the rabbit hole they've gone down is something that we can be annotating out into an environment where, you know, hey, you know, I'm going to make, I want to, and then we meet with, you know, whoever, you know, disagrees and actually go into communication about these things. And actually what I'd like to see done is actually, in terms of throwing a party for everyone, I'm going to put a new assertion on the table here that you didn't read, but that the military-industrial complex has put inadvertently the biggest bounty on its head by way of being so damn costly that, and while at the same time being totally unnecessary if communication was communication, right? So all these things are being... Dan, I'm looking at your face. It's communicating to me. So come at me, dog.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean by that? The military industrial, the assertion that you made about the military industrial complex putting a bounty on its head.
Yeah. And because it's so counterproductive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. Boy. I mean, so it's the Cold War all over again. I mean, it's, you know, so this is where the background matters. So the prisoner's dilemma became really popular as a way of understanding this. But the problem is, the prisoners can't communicate. Now, notice we're already communicating. So we've got some advantage to like pre-plan, you know, a future where we're not going to be in a zero-sum game and like, you know, having to defect from each other, which is like, I'm going to sell at 73 and then you're
yeah.
this defect, right. You know, this whole negotiation, trying to keep it fair and balanced or something. What I want to say here, the...
Well, I, you know what? Unfortunately, like the time is like catching up with me for today, but yes, we need to get you back on kind of soon and keep going because
we could edit this down to half an hour. I think.
We need to get together soon. Cause I want to do one where we could maybe a 2 hour episode because an hour is not enough for
totally.
And this is one of those episodes where an hour is not enough. So, I mean, we're going to put this out cause it was great. It's a primer, but I want to do like a longer one where we can. I want to come back with like more of a structured way to like ask you certain questions because I realized after 1 hour that we could probably do 50 hours and that would
flew.
Be just can touching I, this the that would just be touching the surface.
Can I just point out one thing I wanted to point out, and that was
Michael.
That. This, you know, this comments on our YouTube channel. I finally understand, based on this conversation, you know, what's going on here. There's a lot. It's so in depth, like how many places that you can go that you've made these little annotations and the speed in which you can receive that information. And I never even realized.
When I'm like really, really high and I'm like really on like one of my waves of thinking, like where I'm just like deep in thought, I empathize with this so much because like I will be on the most, I don't know how to describe it, but just like eye-opening, having this crazy epiphany about something. And then I'll immediately get distracted by something very similar that's like, oh my God, that's actually better. And I'll try to come back. Like, I don't even remember what I was thinking of. And then I think about it later and it's like,
so you're
trying to describe it to somebody and you just keep going down rabbit holes, going down rabbit, because you're like, you got to understand this. To understand this, you got to have this, because you keep talking about it. You need this context. You need that 9/10 of it.
We work like that Xanological structure that you can't reduce to paper. It's nonlinear. And we had the opportunity, we still have the, Jesus, what we're doing right now is creating a future where we actually have this place of not just the shared reality of, you know, 21 million, but also if you have an idea, you put it into the space and it could be attacked from every angle.
Right.
And it's all the background there is
right.
How do we're going to have better strategies to have better purchasing power with all that Bitcoin, right?
What better defense mechanism or like defense system to have evolved than what you have? Because if an enemy is trying to think about what your next move is going to be, that's impossible because you don't even know until the last second.
Well, the thing is, the enemy is my friend. I'm here to befriend my enemies, and that
keep
that
your
brings
enemies close.
Back.
Yeah. Your friends closer, so, your enemies closer.
So I'm gonna leave you with the alternate to the prisoner's dilemma as a metaphor in which we find ourselves. So anyway, it's a true story, but and I'll share the link later. But there's a woman. She's laying in bed and and it's dark. She like feels a brush on her leg and she like panics, and then she's all of a sudden, next thing she knows, she's on the floor wrestling full on with this person who's like there, and she's like, "What's what?" And they don't reply. It's silent, and she's like she gets to, you know, to the light switch to try to, you know, like reveal what's going on, and hits it, and no one's there. And what happened was, she had some sort of brain event that shorted out her own sense of self-perception, her proprioception. This is how you can walk up a flight of stairs without so your own sense of where your body is in space. And so she didn't know that the feedback of her touching herself was not her. It felt like someone else. And that to me is what's happening at all scales of reality up to this. And so being able to channel people into a conversation where we discover they actually have the same needs.
Yeah.
And we were pretending that we were enemies. You know, it's
yeah, a big that's
joke.
A good point. Like if you you talk to somebody like myself who would have a really intense psychedelic experience where you kind of have this epiphany or this realization, like the ego dissolves and you feel like it's like we're all the same part of the same system. We're maybe like the same organism, so to speak, and that a lot of this conflict we're having is this ego barrier. That's causing yeah. this, like you don't realize you're harming yourself.
Marshall Rosenberg calls it the jackal postal delivery system. And to understand that, so like the sort of attack, the adversarial mode is all involved, caught up in the, like, this is who you are, you
it's
know,
ego,
and,
yeah.
And like blah, blah, blah. Yeah, and the understanding is in our social reality, this space that we're trying to inhabit together, is rife with all this background of, you know, who you can't trust, of gaslighting narcissists. I was, and you know, if it, the funny thing with the reality, the way humans work is that if you look for gaslighting narcissists, you will find evidence for that. Myself, in my conversation for Eucatastrophe, I'm looking for the ways to put out in the space, the shared reality that we can elect to opt into as not only as Bitcoiners, but as people, as language, as human beings using language to, you know, better cope with the world.
Yeah.
So
this is great. Do you want people to find you or find what you're writing?
Yeah. I mean, you can put my Twitter link in there.
Okay.
And,
we'll do.
I'm up for, you know, just more conversations. If someone wants, I look forward to talking to y'all. Because
yeah, I hope Fundamentals, our buddy from the Rock Paper Bitcoin podcast, reaches out, because I feel like we should all be like in a Telegram
like
channel or something
Red
together.
Tail, and you should have some
oh
sort
my god,
of like,
we should get them on together. Honestly,
my gosh, take jamboree.
We should have like some high hash rate, like that's not part of the main podcast,
oh, hell yeah.
but where it's like where we got him, Red Tail, and Fundamentals together, and just let them talk for a few hours, and then we'll just record it all, and then we'll cut it down into like an hour or two. We got to make this happen, Mike. But we're gonna get you back on. We want to talk more, and I'm gonna come back with more specific things that I want to drill down into, because this was a great conversation, and it's great for our podcast and like our listeners, because there was just so many crazy good ideas, but I think I also want one where we kind of stay focused on ideas, and
that's why I put those little timestamps in there, so I can kind of meditate
exactly.
on
good
that
idea.
Little
perfect.
Thing. So
perfect. All right, man,
cool.
Jeremy, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Thank you for coming on.
The Eucatastrophe, the high, how, and the link for, The How of Hyper-Bitcoinization will be in the show notes. You got to read it. It's not long. You'll get through it quick, but it is in
700 words.
In 700 words will make you Google something, like probably in every paragraph. Google something either not necessarily because you don't know what it is, but because it makes you think of something. You're like, oh shit, I got a reference. I got to check this against. Like, it's the same idea. It's just somebody else said it. You know what I mean? So you talk about the links, right? So, yeah.
Cool, man. Okay. Thank you again for listening to the High Hash Rate Podcast with Dan and Mike. If you want to learn more about the podcast and see what we're up to, you can find us at highhashrate.com. Or if you just want to speak to a couple of baked 80 IQ plebs, reach out to us at hello@highhashrate.com. Or you can reach out to us at the High Hash Rate handle on X. Later, everybody.
Holy Toledo!